Sina, thanks for taking some time to be with us.
I'm delighted to be here.
When I think of your last three books, I think they are similar in the fact that they have kind of interesting antecedents. Sherlock and Love builds on Sherlock Holmes in those books, and Ahab's Wife comes from a single line in that wonderful novel. And now your latest book, it has a historical antecedent. Is there, now you're not the only writer doing this, building on previous works to some extent, is there a term for this, or is there, what makes you, why are you interested in this form?
Well, I call Ahab's Wife a companion novel to Moby Dick. It's not a sequel or a prequel, but it tells a part of the story that Melville left out. Melville just mentions in passing that Captain Ahab had a wife. He gives her no name. He gives her no life. And I have, in a great number of pages, given Ahab's wife the name of Una Spencer and a life of her own that's a questing life. In some ways, it's like the life of Ishmael. But I wrote that book partly because I felt the American landscape had left out a portrait of a woman protagonist who had just as much courage, philosophical depth, moral stamina as the characters in the male novels. So it seemed to me there was a gap in the literary landscape and I wanted to fill it. I felt that way also about my civil rights novel, Four Spirits. There's been a lot of documentary material on the civil rights movement, books of photographs, films, Spike Lee's film, Four Little Girls, interviews, the wonderful Howell Raines interviews, My Soul Is Rested, but very little fiction. And it seems to me that fiction can do something that no other art form can do. It takes you inside the character. So you see the world through the character's eyes. You get in someone else's skin. So for me, fiction and the imagination are enormous moral and spiritual forces that enrich us by making our experiences more broad and also by giving them depth, because fiction can access the interior life. So again, I looked at the American Civil Rights Movement and saw a gap in the literary coverage, and I wanted to do what I could to celebrate those people who had been leaders and followers during the Civil Rights Movement, and to tell the truth through fiction about just how difficult it was in Birmingham at that time. Of course, I was born in Birmingham. I grew up in Birmingham. I was there during the early 60s. So it was a story, in a sense, that I myself had lived.
You mentioned Spike Lee's film, Four Little Girls. I thought of that when I read your book. There's a villain in that film, in the form of George Wallace, who appears in the film, and I think appears almost cartoonish and almost grotesque at times. Mm-hmm. Your villain in your book is more nuanced. How difficult is it to write about a villain in this time and give it more texture?
Well, aesthetically, I don't believe in dealing with heroes and villains. My vision is more complex than that. I think we all have something of the villain in us. We're all capable of dark deeds and terrible acts. So even prior to coming into the material of Four Spirits, I felt that I had to encompass a wide range of people. It was important to me, as I said, to tell the truth about Birmingham, to celebrate the leaders. But also, I felt the story had to be told from many different perspectives. So I've created a member of the Ku Klux Klan as one of the characters in my novel, Four Spirits. Of course, in Birmingham, the immediate arch villain was Bull Connor, the elected commissioner of public safety. It was his decision to have firemen turn high-powered water hoses on peaceful demonstrators. It was his decision to bring in police dogs to harass children. There were many children who participated in the demonstrations of May 1963, ages 6 to 16. So I wanted to cover the spectrum of people involved in that. I think it's one reason it took me so long to write this book. I had promised myself I would write it back when I was living it in the 60s. But I really didn't have enough breadth of vision to feel confident in imaginatively entering into the life of, in this case, Ryder Jones, a member of the Ku Klux Klan. So you ask, how difficult was it? It was very difficult. I didn't want to go inside that character. And when it was time for him to appear in the book, I thought, well, I'll bet he has a wife. So I invented a wife, and I stayed with her for a while, which didn't take me very far inside him. And then I thought, well, of course, his children love him. So I went back and put in a child looking at his father, hoping his father would take him fishing. But when I would show the book to my friends and finally to my agent, they all said the same thing. This is a fine book, Sina, but you've stereotyped Ryder Jones, the member of the Ku Klux Klan. So how was I going to overcome this? Finally, I decided I would take him away from all people, all other people, and just put him in nature. So I sent him fishing in a chapter named Cahaba. That's the name of a river, as you know, in Alabama. And then when I had Ryder Jones fishing by himself, it seemed to me that I had more leisure to enter into his memories and his hopes and his fears at that point.
He was really more honest alone than he was with others.
He was a better person alone. He would have been a good man had nobody else been in the world.
Well, you chronicle a violent time, and the reader abhors the violence.
Yes.
In this book, maybe with one exception. Do you think, and I don't want to spoil the book, but do you think the violence is ever justified that you chronicle in this?
No, I don't think so. There is a surprising move in the violence. The book is not just about the violence of the civil rights movement. It's about domestic violence as well. And sometimes, as we know, women who have been oppressed for a long time by their husbands will rise up in a violent way. But I do not myself see that as a solution ever. I'm an advocate of nonviolence, and I'm a pacifist. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to tell the civil rights story, is because in that instance, nonviolent action did bring about enormous social change, as it had in India when Gandhi led the Indian peoples against the rule of the British. It's what I feel we need in our society now. We need for nonviolent leaders to come into prominence in the Middle East. We need for people to step forward who are willing to die, but die in the cause of peace instead of violence.
You mentioned the Cahaba a minute ago. When I read that scene, I thought of Diane McWhorter's book, Carry Me Home,
yes,
where she talks about the Klan meetings under that very bridge,
yes,
on the Cahaba River. We're in the home of James Thurber.
Yes.
It's a wonderful place. You're writing about your home. How difficult is it to write about home rather than a whaling village in New York, in New England, for instance?
Well, it's very difficult, or it was for me. The most difficult part for me was doing research into what was going on in Birmingham while I was living there. I discovered that there were many more atrocities than I was aware of. This made me feel guilty. I couldn't do the research for Four Spirits late at night because then I couldn't sleep at night. It seemed terrible to me that while I was aware of some of what was going on, I had no idea of the depth and extent of it. So facing the dark side of my hometown was a very painful and difficult part. On the other hand, I think all of us at a certain age look back on that time when our own characters changed and were reformed, the time of maturation. And my novel partly is about the maturation of a number of characters. One of them, Stella Silver, is based fairly closely on my own experience. During that era, I did go out to Miles College, which at that time was an all-black school in Birmingham. And I did, with a friend of mine, Carol Countryman, who was in a wheelchair, participate in a night school effort. We hope to enable high school dropouts to pass the GED, the high school equivalency test, and therefore to empower them. So Stella Silver's odyssey through Birmingham, her decision to become an activist, were a pleasure to write about. It's a time of maturation when we come into our sense of ourselves as sexual beings, having our own distinct spirituality, having special relationships to close friends and to family, It's a very exciting time, and I wanted Four Spirits to catch the rhythm of ordinary life as well as the historic movement of the civil rights movement.
There are some characters we know in this book. They're historical figures.
Yes.
Fred Shuttlesworth.
Yes.
Who was the fiery local preacher.
Right.
Who did a lot of the work.
Yes.
And until recently wasn't credited for it
in
the movement. You get inside his head, and we know what he's thinking. There are some characters that you didn't do that with. For instance, the four girls who were killed in the bombing.
Yes.
of the church. Why some and not the others?
Well, my book is titled Four Spirits, and that is a reference to the four girls who were killed in the racist, terrorist bombing of 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, September 15, 1963. They're at the core of the book. They are represented in the title. But I do not recreate them as characters. Instead, I take one step back and create fictional characters who are influenced by the bombing. So I'm really dealing with these girls as a spiritual force rather than as actual little girls. I wanted to do that because their influence has been so widespread. Martin Luther King expressed the hope that the blood of those innocent girls would have redemptive power. And I think it did have redemptive power, not just in Birmingham, but it seemed to me that terrible event awakened the conscience of white America throughout the United States, that people began to feel that we needed to do something actively to change our society. If this was a place where innocent children could be killed in their own church, things needed to change. Things really were in terrible condition in terms of race relations. So it was partly because I wanted to emphasize the spiritual force of the girls that I didn't deal with them directly, but also it was out of respect for their short, unique lives. There are many people still alive who knew them, their family and friend. Chris McNair, the father of the youngest of the girls, Denise McNair, became a friend during my time with this material. And he actually is the photographer and took my photograph for the jacket of Four Spirits. And I didn't want to put an invented child in my book when he remembered his own child, just the way she was. So it seemed to me that these girls, for my imagination, were surrounded by a kind of ring of fire, and that was a sacred place, and I didn't want to step into that. On the other hand, I felt with Fred Shuttlesworth or the voice of Bobby Kennedy that they were historic figures. They were quoted in the newspapers. They have a public life already. And I did do a lot of careful research on the sort of thing Fred Shuttlesworth said. And I felt that he had not been honored sufficiently. Diane McWhorter made the same decision, although our research was completely independent. It really coincided a great deal about Fred Shuttlesworth deserving more of the spotlight, more credit for change in Birmingham and thus in the South and in the United States. I was at a book signing with Fred Shuttlesworth recently, and he, like Chris McNair, is of course elderly. Fred Shuttlesworth is, I guess about 82 by now. But there was such a spirit in him, such a spirit of loving kindness and warmth, a graciousness and elegance about him, that I felt very good that I had tried in some way to honor him. In my earlier books as well, in Ahab's Wife and even in Sherlock in Love, I do try to blend together the fictional world and the factual world. I like the interplay of memory and imagination. I think they're good bedfellows. They're often in each other's spaces. Ask anyone to remember something, ask two people, and you've got different stories. Part of memory is imagination. So I was wanting to blend those worlds in these books that I've written.
When you undertake this project, how do you know or how do you sense that it will move from particular interest to general interest? How do you sense that this book will be of interest to readers in Columbus, Ohio, even though it's set elsewhere?
Well, I think everyone in Columbus, Ohio is interested in the story of maturation that I mentioned earlier. We're either going through it, we're going to go through it, or we have gone through it. And that's a dominant motif in Four Spirits. I think, too, that the American story has to talk about race relations. And it seems to me that people know the importance of that subject, and they do want to understand it more thoroughly. And the imagination provides one way of understanding that story more thoroughly. I talk about the role of schools and libraries and churches in the lives of the citizens of Birmingham. And those are universal factors in people forming a sense of themselves and in getting on with their lives and looking for support. So people in Columbus as well will want to think about the roles of their libraries or historic houses like this one we're sitting in, the James Thurber House, and certainly the role of schools in helping children to move along. So I think there are many human factors about in this novel, which is a civil rights novel in some way. It's also a story of coming of age and of making important life decisions that any reader anywhere in any country, I think, can identify with.
I think it's interesting that as the civil rights movement was a spiritual movement,
yes,
the church was heavily involved. There's a spiritual element that is central to your book, even reflected in the title.
Yes, indeed. That's certainly true. I wanted to honor particularly people from the African American church that had very basic beliefs that gave them a great deal of courage. I do have people working in the civil rights movement who come from other backgrounds. I have people from the North. I have a Jewish intellectual who comes down south, as did happen and greatly facilitated the civil rights movement. I have people who are humanists, people who are in the process of spiritual questing rather than being firmly rooted in a spiritual tradition. So, again, one of my purposes was to be as inclusive as possible. And since the subject has to do with equality and with improved relations, it just seemed very appropriate to me to tell the story from many different perspectives.
Your previous book, Ahab's Wife, is also titled The Stargazer.
Yes.
And in this book, the protagonist is Stella.
Yes.
You're dealing with two women among the stars. Talk about the women and the heavens.
Well, the idea for Ahab's Wife came to me in a vision. I was in Boston. My novel, Sherlock in Love, had just come out. It had gotten great reviews, and I was very happy. I was driving a little rented car around in Boston. I was not lost. I felt like a competent human being. And out of that good feeling, I had a vision and heard a voice. The vision was of a woman on a roof walk or widow's walk. It was night. She was looking out to sea, hoping to see her husband's whaling ship coming home. But as she looked, she realized that he was not coming home, not that night, not ever. And with that realization, her gaze shifted from the ocean, the dark ocean, to the great starry sky. And she began to ask, "Who am I in the face of all this vast glory of the heavens? What's my place in the universe?" So she wasn't waiting for someone to come home and define her as wife or in any other way, but asking her own spiritual questions and seeking her own answers. So the vastness of space is for me a natural metaphor for a spiritual quest. And as my character had this vision, a voice said to me, "Captain Ahab was neither my first husband nor my last," which is the first sentence in Ahab's Wife. And it does suggest a kind of continuous journey, which I feel we all participate in throughout our lives. It happens that my reading had been in physics and astronomy, my bedtime reading, for a couple of years before I wrote Ahab's Wife. And I did that almost as devotional reading because I could feel my sense of reality expanding and becoming more inclusive as I read about the vastness of space or about the tininess of the physical world as well. Also, I found music to be a natural metaphor for the spiritual life, and maybe that comes across more in an earlier book in Sherlock in Love or in my short story collection, The Disobedience of Water. The spiritual world is difficult to write about in a very direct way, and these metaphoric explorations have helped me to be expressive about the subject matter.
In the end, in your book, things really aren't much better in Birmingham yet, I would say. We've learned that that Stella has grown.
Yes.
The city has maybe made steps, but they're tentative steps.
Yes, change happened over time in Birmingham, but things did start to change with the May 1963 demonstrations. Martin Luther King came to town at the invitation of Fred Shuttlesworth, and promises were made, for example, to hire African-American policemen and firemen, which had not been done before in Birmingham, to employ African-Americans in department stores as clerks, not just as janitors, to take down the white and colored sounds on signs on facilities such as drinking fountains and restrooms. So these were important, somewhat symbolic, but also actual changes that began in Birmingham. I think that Fred Shuttlesworth wanted change to happen a little more rapidly than Martin Luther King, and there was some friction between them about that. But because of Birmingham, King's leadership role throughout the United States was reestablished as the leader of the nonviolent movement. So John F. Kennedy said, but for Birmingham, there would have been no civil rights movement. So it is at the very center of that movement, and it's the beginning of change. But of course, there's much to be done now, let alone within the few years after the civil rights movement. And change needs to continue to take place, not just in behavior, but in people's hearts and their ways of relating with each other.
I understand now that Marie Antoinette has captured your imagination.
Well, she has. I think that my next novel is going to be about Marie Antoinette, titled Heart of a Queen. The Marie Antoinette story has been told many times, but not, I feel, sympathetically and from the inside as she lived it. She never said, let them eat cake. That maligns her. Other people said it, but not Marie Antoinette. In fact, she was a compassionate and kind person in many ways. She's a figure rather like Eve, who is held responsible for the fall of mankind, but Marie Antoinette was held responsible in too large measure for the fall of the French monarchy. I not only value the lives of four African-American girls who died in Birmingham, but at the other end of the spectrum, this person of great power and privilege in Marie Antoinette had a valuable life as well. So I'm writing about her really from the same impulse that caused me to write about the four little girls. I'm writing about her to write about the preciousness of life.
Well, I wish you luck with that project, and Four Spirits is a wonderful book, as is Ahab's Wife, and I thank you for taking the time to talk about it with us.
It's lovely to talk with you. Thank you.